I'm Alexia Ridley with Athens News Matters, a show dedicated to local news, current events, and community outreach efforts. Today, my guests discuss the election results, including Democrats winning the House District 117 and 119 seats, as well as Clark County voters approving the T-SPLOST. And we discuss local requests to the 2018 legislative delegation. All that and much more next on Athens News Matters. Hello, I'm Alexia Ridley, host of Athens News Matters. My guests today are Blake Odd with Flagpole, Gwen O'Looney with WXAG, and District 6 Commissioner Jerry Neesmith. So welcome back, everyone, and we'll start with, I think, what caught so many of us by surprise, the election results for the House districts. And we might as well start with 117. We'll go in order. So let's start with 117. And that was between Deborah Gonzalez, the Democrat, and Houston Gaines, the Republican, with a massive war chest.
Right, yeah. He had about $200,000, and that's a lot of money to spend on a House race. And, you know, one of the things we'll probably talk about later is he didn't spend it all.
He did not spend it. And that was just his last report. Who knows
right.
how much he
that's
ended
right,
up
yeah.
with.
But, yeah, he you know, he was running in 117, and that was Regina Quick's district, Republican-leaning district. And kind of the X factor in that race was Mayor Nancy Denson endorsing the Republican Gaines over the Democrat Gonzalez, and no one was quite sure how many Democratic voters were going to follow the mayor's lead and vote for the Republican, and it turns out probably none. She got really strong support in among Democrats and won 64% of the vote in Clark County, which is about half the district. And she won 33%
showing.
In Oconee County. And combine that with low turnout in Jackson and Barrow County, which is about a quarter of the district. Those are very Republican areas, but they didn't turn out. So the numbers ended up working in her favor. She won by 6 points.
Yeah, that 33% is for all the other counties outside of Clark.
Okay.
So I don't know what the Oconee County percent.
I think
was.
It was about 34, actually. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And well.
So the numbers are actually just reversed.
Right. Pretty
them.
Much.
Gonzalez with 64% in Clark County and 68% in other counties in.
But in terms of the raw votes, there are more voters in Clark County, and generally you would see a higher turnout in Oconee County than Clark County is usually the way it goes, but they were pretty much the same this time. And so just the number of raw voters, not talking right. about the percentages, worked to Gonzalez's advantage.
Right. But the Board of Elections this morning said that we had one of the largest turnouts for a special election that in her memory. And then that was also true as far as Oconee Enterprise reported that for Oconee. So there was a very strong response to this special election that's not usually expected by the Republicans. That's why they set it up this way.
Yeah. I have a lot of friends in Oconee County who tend to be progressive, and they got organized after the Trump election, very, very much so in Oconee County. And I think this is one of their fruits.
Mm-hmm. And it is a fruit. Mm-hmm. We really... we have so much to be thankful for that we now have a community and maybe even a state that really thinks that Democrats have a chance. I mean, the fact that we have not challenged those two seats in the last election since 2011 redistricting, we should be ashamed of it. But, I mean, who wants to blow their money? Gonzalez and Wallace were excellent examples of citizens who had never been involved politically, but had good, sound, established careers and lives in a way that they decided to step out. And it was just, it's just great to see this kind of response to quality candidates.
And they were both very high quality candidates.
Yes, they really were. But they've got 1 year ahead of them. I don't want to stop talking about this too quick.
They've got to do it again next year.
They've got to do it again. And Houston Gaines is sitting on it. I bet he's sitting on over $100,000.
He had $150,000 the last time he reported, which was about that would have been 2 weeks ago, he had 150.
Right. And you notice all of his signs, none of them have a date on them. None of them have a saying. He has no stance, of course. He didn't make a stance on anything. But so, believe me, he's packing up these signs. He's, you know, renting the storage bin, and he's going to be coming out again in 18. But before he does that, he's really got to prove himself to be an adult. He's got to have a real job. He's got to be in a situation where he understands and, you know, he has his political positions, and he can state those clearly.
You mean like Trump did?
Yeah. Well, you know, people are calling him Baby Trump, and I know that that has a lot to do with the fact that he never, ever defined himself as a candidate who had separate understandings or beliefs about any issue, not one issue.
And this is going to be, that is going to be a hang-up for every Republican because, you know, he tried to be wishy-washy about it and tried to thread that needle and be like, well, I support some of his policies, but, you know, and... You know, you can't do that because if you do that, your base is not going to have enthusiasm. You know, I mean, Trump supporters are not going to, you know, turn out for you the way that they turn out for Trump if you don't have that loyalty and that outspokenness. But then when you look at the other side in the 119 race, you had three Republicans who were all like, I love Trump. Trump is great. Trump is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Love everything about him. You know,
and they were well known in the county, too.
That's true, yeah. But, you know, and that didn't work for them either, you know, because that turned off, you know, I guess, you know, whatever moderate, you know, and Oconee County is. I mean, it's pretty moderate for a Republican area. You know, these are not real fire. They're kind of Rubio Republicans, a lot of them. So,
well, but on the other hand,
that turned off a lot of people too.
Jonathan Wallace only got 17% of the vote in Oconee County.
17? I thought he got 38.
My eyes are failing me. 38% in Oconee County.
Well, 38,
which is pretty significant.
38%
so I take
for a Democrat.
Where I was going there. Yes.
38% for a Democrat in Oconee County is pretty good.
But he got 76% in Clark County,
which is even better. That's
which is incredible.
Right. But again, Clark County had to turn out.
Yes.
And this is, they have learned that they can reverse that Republican redistricting, that they can show with a strong enough turnout, we can take over our seats that we deserve to have in the House. I mean, for sure, hopefully we're just beginning.
And Clark County has the numbers. I mean, both of these districts, they are over 50% Clark County.
Right.
But it's always been the turnout. And so when they were drawn for Republican, but they were looking at the turnout and going, well, Clark's never going to turn out the way Coney does. And this time they did.
Yes, yes.
Well, I was wondering if T-Splos had something to do with the progressive turnout in Clark County. So you saw what I did. I compared for the 119 race, the T-Splos votes, positive votes, versus the votes for him. And it was interesting. The lowest votes for T-Splos were at
Timothy
Road School. And the highest votes for him were at Timothy Road School. The light's not very good.
The highest percentage for T-Splos.
And Memorial Park was the same.
Was in Chase, 96% in the Chase precinct.
96%.
They didn't have a statehouse race on the ballot.
That was the only thing on their ballot.
And they had the highest turnout, too.
That's right. The highest turnout, 42%.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud of my neighborhood.
So it's mixed messages. We're not sure what the effect of T-Splos was.
Yeah, there's really not a whole correlation there.
It doesn't seem to be.
Yeah, T-Splos doesn't, it wasn't the partisan issue that I think most people thought it was.
But we want to thank you, Jerry, for compiling numbers so that we could actually see that. So
yeah.
If anybody hears the rustling of papers, it's because we're actually looking at the numbers
Jerry's
that
numbers.
Jerry Neesmith so graciously compiled for us.
But, you know, the other thing I think we need to look at, if we can jump back and forth between T-Splos and the political races, but the lowest turnout was in the Cleveland Road area.
And it was
the Cleveland School area.
It was the lowest vote for T-Splos, too.
That's what I mean. It was the lowest vote for T-Splos. They had nothing else but T-Splos. They felt negatively because they had no...
There was a candidate.
There was a
candidate?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's in the 117th,
Is it?
Cleveland Road. Yeah, that's where I vote.
I believe so, yes.
Okay,
yeah, I know
wow.
so. That's where
okay.
I vote.
Okay, well, then that takes away my... But I had really wondered... I think we haven't done a good job yet of showing our outer areas of our county, that transportation programs can help them immensely.
Well, in Cleveland Road, just to go off the subject for a moment, there's not even a school, there's not even a public transit to Cleveland Road School. There's not a sidewalk to Cleveland Road School. It's on a 2-lane paved country road.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In the middle of an AR district.
Yeah, there's, and we looked at that, nothing. But we would have had to build almost eight. I mean, it was an amazing amount of sidewalk had to build to connect it at all to anything.
Yeah.
And so it's much safer to keep those kids off of that 2-lane road that doesn't have the connections.
That's what happens when the Board of Education buys cheap land for schools instead of figuring out what they need to be.
That's right. That's right. Yes, yes, yes. But, well, anyway, let's get back to... I happened to be at Deborah Gonzalez's last night when Houston Gaines called to concede, and I think that was really gracious and that sort of thing. But I think that there was this amazing, you know, those people, they had been thinking that she was going to win all night, but then they had been waiting to see if that Oconee was going to bring in a precinct or a huge amount of votes that they didn't expect or whatever, so they really weren't sure. And that little tiny piece of dynamite named Deborah Gonzalez really did. They all realized the victory that she had won. And it's being recognized nationally. We are not talking about two races that are being ignored nationally. The other thing I think that I have to mention is that last night in Georgia, four cities who had never had an African-American mayor elected one. Four cities.
I know Milledgeville was
Milledgeville,
one of them.
Statesboro, Cairo, and Norcross.
That's an African-American woman, though.
Right.
Milledgeville has had an African-American mayor.
Right, the first
oh, really?
African-American
oh,
woman.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, they
it's missed, still a milestone.
It's a milestone, yeah. I agree, but they have had a mayor.
They misreported that then because for Milledgeville.
I just heard it on NPR, and they said it like you did.
That African-American female, yeah.
Right. Well, it
must be right.
And one, it must be the Vox or whatever misreported it then.
This kind of thing happened all over the state. The Democrats picked up three Republican-held seats, including these two, but also another one in Metro Atlanta, a Senate seat, out of seven that were up for grabs. And you saw it in Virginia with the governor's race, where Northam, the Democrat, did a lot better than the polls showed that he was going to do. They may actually, you know, well, there was still votes were still being counted. There were a couple close races, but they came pretty close to taking the Virginia House of Delegates. I think Hoboken, New Jersey, elected I believe a Muslim mayor.
Sikh.
Sikh. Okay, excuse me.
Indian. Right.
Right. There was a transgender woman was elected to the legislature in Virginia. I mean, a lot of...
That was a real contrast against her opponent.
Who beat a guy who I believe introduced a bathroom bill in the Virginia legislature. So that's kind of symbolic as well. So, I mean, this is something that we saw in races, you know, all over the East Coast where they were happening.
That's right. All right.
And that's the first time that I think there were only 40-something seats, I think, that were contested by the Democrats out of, you know, about 120 approximately in the last election cycle. So this is a new strategy for the Democrats, and they've got a new minority leader in the House caucus, Bob Trammell, who's from Luthersville, I want to say. He's a rural, one of the few remaining white rural Democrats who they elected to replace Stacey Abrams when she resigned that position to run for governor. So, and he had a great night. I mean, you can look at that result. They netted three seats. You know, that's more than they've netted in the past 6 years. They only netted one. So.
And so, therefore, our delegation, our state house delegation, has three Democrats and two Republicans now.
Wow.
And all three house seats, you know, probably for the first time since everybody was a Democrat, you know, held by Democrats, because that was... Before it was Chuck Williams, that was Bob Smith's seat for many years.
Right.
There's like some energy in the Democratic Party compared to just a few months ago where it seemed like there was despondency.
Well, I was looking at the results and I was just, you know, I kept staring at my computer going, this can't be right. You know, this, especially Wallace, 57% for Wallace, you know, in that district. That's just, I was
he
like,
he came from nowhere.
Yeah. This can't be.
I mean,
right.
You know,
but
I go to church with him. I didn't know who he was.
Well, he's a deacon in your church.
I knew people. He just got on the session a few weeks ago.
I knew people in Oconee County who weren't even sure that he was going to make it into the runoff.
Yeah.
So.
And he didn't eke out a win.
No.
He gloried.
Against three other people to get 57% is incredible.
That's a landslide. That is a landslide.
That is organized party right there. Yep. That is getting the vote out. I mean, he's very personable, very bright young man. Mm-hmm. He really is.
He's probably exhausted.
He is.
But he did it.
Right. But both of them did a good job.
They did.
I mean, I looked at the organization on Sunday before the election. And Deborah Gonzalez did a great job. He did a great job. And I want to comment on what Blake was pointing out about the diversity of candidates across the nation that were elected. I think this is a real statement by people that we are not, we're not against people who are different from us. We are not for divisiveness and meanness. We are for people having good representation, creating a nation that really is unified but different. And I just feel so inspired by what I've seen. And I think the tide is turning. And I really believe that what we're seeing is just the beginning, because I think Trump will continue to scare people and to push for divisiveness. And people are not divided, we fall. And I really believe this is a good reflection of a tomorrow that is much more positive.
And he doesn't represent the majority of Americans.
No.
I mean, you know.
Well, that was true of our vote.
Look at the vote he got. You know, look at his approval rating that's sunk even further since then.
That's right. And a lot of those.
I mean, if he wants to divide people, he's going to lose.
That's right. And a lot of those people had never voted before, hardly, and they really not people that are attuned to the political process, even though I myself, I'm one that wants people to be attuned I really believe an accurate reflection of what people believe will give us a better country. 96% of Americans say that they want common sense control of guns. You know, and what do we have? Nothing. We have, especially in our state.
Well, I'd like to look ahead a little bit, and we talked about this a little bit, but 2018, you know, we talked about how the Republicans are going to come back, and they are going to come back and try to get these House seats. But what does this mean for our congressional seat? You know, we're represented by, you know, the very conservative Jody Heiss, the heir to Paul Brown. We have at least one Democrat, Chalice Montgomery, who's running against him, who seems to be running pretty hard, running pretty seriously. It's a very red district, but does she have a chance, do you think, in November?
I think she does. She has a very reasonable presentation. She has a religious history. She's a minister. She's been involved with. She comes on with a presentation of herself that is so basic and practical and common sense that, she is going to embrace a lot of people, and she is very active. She was at both of those parties last night. She's been involved with some Republicans, and she's crossing the aisle, as you say, over and over again. She's going where a lot of Democrats have been afraid to go in the past, and I think she's got a good chance.
Well, she put out a statement yesterday kind of capitalizing on these House races, saying, like, look, this is proof that, like, I can do it. That's a tough sell. I'm a little skeptical, but, you know, I'm skeptical of everything. Right. I'm skeptical of, you know, these two Democrats in these House races.
Yeah, I saw the prediction that you wrote yesterday.
I was just going to say
come true.
That Blake, a flagpole, my favorite, you know, news source in the whole world, flagpole almost ended every article about these races saying, well, they probably can't win. So I'm hoping, anyway.
We all agreed with them.
I was about to say I wasn't the only one.
No, you weren't.
In fact, most of the people who were telling me I was wrong were telling me I was wrong the other way.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah,
the Republicans are going to win bigger.
Yeah. But I very early on, I won't say who I sat down and talked with, but I sat down and talked with someone, and they showed me that if we can just put out turn out 2,000 people in Clark County, we can win Gonzalez's position. If we just put, you know, so-and-so. And we did that. We did a good job. What's the total?
4,900 total.
Uh-huh. 4,900. So we turned out.
Don Gonzalez, there were 3,100.
All right. So we turned out 3,000 people.
Yeah. 3,000 voted for one.
Right. And so, you know, that's not very many when you think about it. We had such a low, you know, 20, what was it? What was our
23%?
22%,
I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So, turnout.
But that's pretty good for a special election. I looked up what it was.
Yeah. Oh, it is.
Yeah. I looked up what it was in 11 and in 07, and it was like 15 or 16 in 07 and
right.
12, I think, 12, in 11.
Yeah.
Cora Wright said this morning that this is the highest turnout she remembers
in a special election.
And Oconee Enterprise, I think I said this before, reported the same. So this was a good reflection of your core voters. Mm-hmm.
Blake, as you said, those results didn't just surprise you. I think they surprised all of us and at 117 and 119. And I know, Jerry,
well,
I'm sorry.
I guess you were probably about to throw it to this, but I'm wondering now what having three Democrats instead of one Democrat on the in our legislative delegation.
You know the rule. They won't
the unanimity rule.
Unless it's unanimous.
So that's still around.
I would like to point out something. That is not a rule.
That's their rule.
Well, it's been their tradition.
Right.
And they have broken so many traditions that were to their advantage. I see no problems whatsoever for our legislative delegation to start working in a more effective way.
It's interesting. One of the issues that we're going to talk with the delegation about is about a bill that Frank Ginn is formulating, which is to stop the stormwater fee and say that we can't make it a fee. It has to be a tax. And the result of that, I've said this before probably several times, that means that we're going to, in order to pay the mandated things we have to do for stormwater, we're going to have to raise property taxes. And we'll have to raise them a lot because the university's not going to pay taxes. EPA, EPD, federal courthouse, none of those will pay taxes. So they don't pay taxes, so we're going to have to raise property taxes to make up that difference with that fee.
What would be the argument to support ending the stormwater?
Well, because it's not popular, because people don't understand it.
Because they don't understand it.
But we have to have it.
And that is the job of the unified government of Athens-Clark County.
I agree.
They need to explain. Okay. I just looked at the literature that they sent out recently, had two pieces in there about stormwater. Not either one. So the formula that's used or the rationale didn't explain that this is the only contribution the University of Georgia makes to the government of Athens-Clark County. I mean, other than sales
being
tax
here.
And all that, right?
Well,
I know,
a few others.
I give the university, but not directly from them.
That's for something
or for something we're providing.
Right.
You know,
don't
and
all nonprofits have to pay the fee?
Yes, everybody. Yeah,
that's right.
Everybody
churches. This is the only thing that a whole county is paying for.
And people say, I don't have storm drains around my house. Why am I paying for a stormwater utility fee? And it's because we're charging people based on how much stormwater they shed off of their property. And yeah, we don't keep track of where that stormwater goes, but we have to take care of the whole county. If a particular business had lots of storm water coming off their property, it might not be their fault. They're on a hill or at the bottom of a street, lots of storm water. So we even it out so that, you know, everybody's paying a fair share. It's kind of like people who don't have kids in school paying school taxes. That's for society. That's for the general well-being.
Right. But the other thing is that wherever people are, if they don't have drains near their house, with this money, they will end up in a situation where they have a better system.
It does pay for capital projects.
That's right.
To fix stormwater problems where we have them.
We've had
dozens of projects based on the stormwater fee. We've been able to go in and take care of big neighborhood streets that had huge flooding problems, and we fixed them.
Right.
A whole bunch of them right along Baxter Avenue, off the side streets there.
Right.
So, yeah, it's an important fee.
Right.
You have other requests?
Right, but if Frank Ginn, I mean, now he will not be able, is it correct that he will not be able to introduce that unless the delegation
That's not local legislation.
That's not local.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's
great.
The unanimity rule is only for local.
We just want them to oppose it. We want them to oppose it.
Right. Well, they should. I mean, that is. But all of those local governments, all of those county governments that are beginning to tackle this, because we are all, as always, we're way ahead.
Yeah.
But they're beginning to tackle this. It's a federal mandate. Yeah. They're going to have to pay this. Well, but I'll tell you, the legislature is not attuned to local needs.
To answer your question, Lexi, we've got lots of demands, proper demands, requests, more than probably we've ever had. And just one of the big ones is we want the local election to be moved to December. November.
Yes.
Instead
the runoff
of,
would
instead
be in December.
Of, yes,
May.
That's right. Instead of May. Unified governments have their elections in May. And we don't get sworn in until January. The reason for this is because the unified government, some of them, don't want a high voter turnout for their local elections. And Augusta is the model for this.
Yes.
And the reason is that is you can call it what you wish, but it's voter suppression or it's voter avoidance, whatever you want to call it. They don't want the population to show up for local elections. They're afraid of what will happen. Shame on them.
Like the population might be representative.
It might be representative. Shame on them. Yeah. And I'm going to sell a tell local delegation. If you're not willing to go fight for representative voting, for high voter turnout, then shame on you.
I don't know what they can do, though, because the Augusta delegation has got a lot more power than ours does.
Well, sure they do, but ours won't even stand up to it. They won't they don't even ask for it. And they give back because the other governments don't want it.
Right. And I would kind of not completely disagree, but CalCERT has a lot of clout in that legislature. And he has never listened to what is good for Athens. He's always been Atlanta-prone or Augusta-power-prone.
I have another somewhat controversial request we're making, and that is for them to allow local governments to decide whether to move monuments from government property, from state government property, because we don't have the ability to do that. We can't do it, and we're asking them to give us that option.
That's a tough one.
Well, and that's something that actually we might see some movement on that because I think the Speaker Ralston has said that he doesn't want to address that in the next session.
Hmm. But how do you think that we would come out with that? That's going to be interesting. I like Michael Thurman's suggestion. Let's counter these things. Move those that are offensive, but counter them with new monuments.
What does offensive mean? You can't define that. Our monument is probably one of the least offensive monuments in the state.
Right. I agree completely.
It honors dead soldiers.
Yeah. I have no problems with that.
There's a movement in the state legislature to not allow local municipalities to put fees on property tax bills. We would have to send out separate bills. So we put the garbage fee on our property tax bill. That's going to be very, very expensive to do, and we'll have a higher level of noncompliance.
Right. And it's so efficient.
Yeah,
it
makes
very so
efficient.
Much.
So
that's
business. We're asking them to do that.
Right.
So we're going to have to wrap up. We've run out of time just that quickly. I do want to thank my guests, Blake Odd, Gwen O'Looney, and Commissioner Jerry Neesmith. To hear this show again, visit WUGA.org for a podcast. For questions or comments, visit our Facebook page. This show does not reflect the views of the station, flagpole, or WXAG. Athens News Matters is a production of WUGA, a broadcast service of the University of Georgia. I'm Alexia Ridley.